tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
It's Wednesday. Not really, but when this comes out, it will be. And you know what that means? That means it's RBLR Sun.
Well, that's definitely one way to introduce the podcast.
Yeah, we're working on it. I don't know. We'll go through many. soon. But if you are watching on YouTube, you will see we have a third member today. We have a guest host who is going to tell us about the scrimmage because neither JD nor I could make it. But starting off, JD, how are you doing?
I'm better now that Mike's here. I'll tell you that much. yes, I'm pretty good. I have I'm very excited about the ramping up season. Every day that goes by, every episode that I do research for, I'm like, yo, like they're gonna be playing in 2 weeks, 10 days now since as of this coming out, so very exciting. But kind of funny, welcome to our new listener. You guys might be like, what new listener? And also I'm joking, but I ran into the Rays, I think he's brand ambassador is his official title, but also ex MLB player, World Series walk-off hitter, Brett Phillips, at the coffee shop on Saturday.
Okay.
And he just happened to walk in with his family after we were there. And of course, I had to yap at him about the Sun and RBLR. And so I was kidding that he's a new listener, but he does know he exists. But we actually had a great conversation, and he is unbelievably personable. It's not a surprise that he's the brand ambassador for the Rays, because me and my wife Tia were just having breakfast, and he was like asking us really like good questions about like how we feel about the team and how things are going and how the community feels. Like, it's clear he was interested to hear what like real people had to say, that we stumbled upon him in public. It wasn't like a meet and greet where people were there to meet him and they were gonna suck up to him. It's like we had like a very candid, cool conversation. So his family was very nice too, and we talked about the Sun, and I let them know about the schedule this season, and hopefully maybe they'll make it out to a game. I was surprised they've only been to 2 Rowdies games. I'm like, you work for that company. You should have been to more. But I know that that's at the same time as baseball season, so I'm sure he's very busy. But yeah, I wanted to yap a little bit about my Brett Phillips run-in, and that was pretty cool this weekend. So, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Fresh off this scrimmage. Excited to see some Sun soccer. It was a good game, ended 6-2. It's not to spoil the score, but it was exciting to see the ladies put up a good number of goals.
That's sick. Liz, how are you doing?
Not too bad. I had a very long Saturday where I drove all the way to Melbourne and back in the same day. But the bridal shower is great.
Australia, what's that, like a 40-hour drive?
Yeah.
Speaking of driving across the state, though.
Yes. hi. Yeah, that was great. That was phenomenal. If you are interested in going away to Jacksonville, that is August 22nd. That is a Saturday. It is in 2 weeks. So if you are hearing this right now and you're like, oh my gosh, I would love to go to Jacksonville, you should, one, join the Heatwave Discord, which you can do by going to, I think we have a link on the Heatwave Twitter. What?
I think Mike had the same thought as me, where we were both like, no one ever says I would love to go to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I saw that. That's fair.
Okay. I would love to go see the Sun demolish Jacksonville. How's that?
Jacksonville.
That's fair.
That's, yeah.
I mean, the team looks exciting so far, so don't rule out any road trips yet.
Okay. Well, if you are interested and you can't figure out how to join the Heatwave Discord, just comment on the YouTube. We check the comments fairly frequently, and we will reach out to you. We can procure tickets from the team for very, very free, which is super cool. so tickets are not an issue. Make sure if you come into the Heatwave Discord, you can coordinate with some other folks. It's not just myself and JD and Mike going. So if you need to like maybe share a hotel room or even carpool, we're all very friendly. We do not bite.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like there might be like a Heatwave number of people going. Like that's not to say it's all the people in the heat wave, but total out of Sun fans, it sounds like a heat wave, if we're estimating 10 to 15 people, might be going. So far, yeah. That's who I've heard from. It's a very popular away trip, and we only have two away trips inside Florida this year because we only play every team twice and once away. So this is a great opportunity to get in your first away trip, and you could even do the double and see two extra Sun games this year in person. Instead of just all the home games. So yeah,
highly recommend, by the way, go seeing extra Sun games as someone who has done this. It's great. It's good for your health. It's good for your soul. I highly recommend it.
Yes. Yeah. So looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I hope that you can join us, Brett Phillips, new listener.
So we had a scrimmage. We played USF again. I could not go. JD could not go, but Mike went, and Mike took really good notes, and I'm not biased at all. Mike, yes. Would you want to run us through, who you think you saw there? We have a couple of unannounced, folks that we think we identified. Again, these are just speculation. We don't have any confirmation from the team. We are going based off of like what Mike was literally hearing at the time. It was like, we're just trying to piece together from pictures and what he remembers.
Did you want me to start with a lineup or just go with the full set of players?
Go with the lineup, because then we'll get to the second half lineup, and that's where all the fun ones are.
It was. After the change, we got a lot of surprise players, if you will. All right, so in goal, we had Liz Beardsley starting. Out on the right in defense, we had Parker Goins, which was kind of a surprise. Usually she's an attacker, but as we'll get to, very effective out there. Next to her, we had Viv Bissett. And then on the left side of center back, we had our new signing, Kelsey Hill. Is it right? Kelsey Hill. And then at left back, Leo Scarpelli. In midfield, we had Sam Kroger and Jordan Listro as a two-pair team. In front of them, we had Sid Nicello on the left, Tori Zierenberg in the middle, and Erica Shippey out wide right. And then up top, Shea Connors. Strong lineup. Looks good to me.
So what were your like general thoughts about this lineup? Which pairs did you like? What didn't you like? What did you see?
I liked having Shippey on the field. It looked like having a mirror of Sid Nicello. And seeing her get into attack in different combinations with Zierenberg, Lynn Listro specifically. It was exciting, and it let Sid get into some interesting spots out left. Probably about halfway through the first half there, they switched sides in that classic Nicello, change to the opposite flank and cause some chaos. But it was fun. It was like seeing a second Nicello out there with Shippey. And Zierenberg was good at pulling strings at, getting the ball off Kroger and Listro and spraying it out wide right left or straight up the middle to Connors, who was making little darting runs in between the center backs. Speaking of the midfield, I really like Sam Kroger. She is an incredible partner for Jordan Listro. It's fun to see two proactive midfielders that both want to grab the ball, carry it for a little bit, pass it off to a teammate, run, maybe get it again, and do it all over. And in the same process can slide tackle someone, win possession back, and then continue it again. I think there's going to be a lot of quick movement this year from the Sun football. And it's a lot of excitement.
Did you see the players, like you were saying, the combo between Shippey and Zierenberg and Listro? Did you see them sticking to their positions and running like similar, routes, but like working in similar ways, as opposed to kind of the Sun of last year that was like any attacker can get anywhere and hope they're open, or was it a little bit more rigid, like the players are sticking to positions?
Yeah, I wouldn't say rigid maybe, but disciplined is the right word. Yeah, definitely. Everyone kind of moved up in a unit. There wasn't a lot of maybe mishmashing or like players running into each other and kind of taking up those same positions. And you know, causing the wrong kind of chaos. This year, it seems like maybe the right kind of chaos.
That'd be really nice.
Nice. So some of the notes that I transcribed, so I had a copy of them so I could follow along. Sid is still pulling her tricks to get past three defenders, it sounds like. You know, got to show off for USF. We're still doing short corners. We did six corners because Mike is an angel and actually counted how many corners we had. And all were short, apparently.
Yes, all six corners were short. I think all but maybe one of the free kicks, we had probably three free kicks, were also taken short, which was one of them was I was kind of hoping was maybe like dropped in the box. We've got some tall players out there, so it'd be nice to get some headers this year. But it was interesting. We do like to play our set pieces, maybe a little close. Get a player on the ball, maybe have her beat a player and then cross something in.
And who was taking corners and set pieces? Because I know that was I know Jilly Shimkin was doing a lot of corners, especially on the left side last year. So we kind of have that hole right now.
Yeah, I noticed Sam Kroger was taking all the set pieces.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we got USF gets a goal in the 29th. We get three goals before them. So we have two goals from Erica Chippy, and a Nacello solo goal before USF scores around the 29th minute. We're guesstimating on time. So Mike did his best to go based on when the time started. It wasn't an actual scoreboard.
No, it was just kind of it kicked off around nine, so just, you know, whatever minute that was close, and then the second half, you know, half was 30 minutes, but the second half kicked off at 10 and then 11 for the next one.
Did you notice anything about those first three goals? Were they bangers? Were they ripping shots? Was it a well-coordinated pass?
The first two goals from Chippy were really good team movement. And something I noticed that it seems like we're going to try to do this year is move the ball up the wing, and that player on the wing kind of crossed into midfield. And on a big darting run, they can either have the option to like lay it off to another player, or once they get to the opposite flank, can cross it in. Both of the Chippy goals were off movements like that, where she crossed in, didn't really have an option, and then just figured, I'll rip a shot. And the first one was, I think, a curler into the top left corner. And the right one was kind of bundled in under the goalkeeper. The third one was a Nacello solo goal as well. She kind of just took the ball off like a little challenge. She was dribbling along the left. Flicked the ball over a sliding USF defender, was able to hurdle that slide, continue on with the ball, and then just knocked it far post from 30 yards out or so. She was feeling herself.
The goal from USF, I noticed in your notes you specifically mentioned the person who scored it. It was Yui Suetsugu.
Yes.
And you said she was really a standout for USF.
Noticeably, yeah. It reminded me, her play reminded me of what we get from Jordan Zaid. Maybe a little bit more defensively minded for USF. She was winning a lot of challenges, but on the occasion when she would get forward, she was very effective in making some passes up the wing, crossing the ball back into the center. She cleaned up, the goal that she got was, she cleaned up at the far post and just noticed that Scarpelli was maybe checked a little bit too far in, and took that space, found the ball, and tapped it in from 5 yards out.
Sign her up.
Hey.
She is a senior, I checked.
Sign her up.
Yeah. Tell me about, I remember you were talking about, we were talking a little bit about this last night, this clean two-touch passing note.
Okay, something I had noticed, I don't remember what time, because there was a lot of, I looked down at the phone for goals, but I wasn't noticing too much the regular play. But Something I had stopped to note was that there was a lot of heads up play from the team. They looked very confident in their passing. Everyone would make a pass, receive it, and then the next touch would be playing it on to the next person. And it was almost like we're just kept marshaling USF back farther and farther, and like, let's push them a little bit farther right, let's push them a little farther left, let's push them a little farther right, and just kind of press them in. I think one of those really good movements resulted in the Shibby goal from the 23rd, or the 9th. Both of hers were before the 10th minute. but it was after last year and seeing a lot of errant passing, I would say, not a lot of passes that connected, or maybe some passes that were heads down and hopeful. It's reassuring to see the team have that heads up play and confidently play the ball on to their teammate in a like attacking sense. It wasn't possession for the sake of possession. It was a lot of like, hey, we have the ball. Let's keep going towards their net.
Nice. Okay. So I think that about wraps up the first half. Was there any other notes specifically from the first half you wanted to mention?
From the first half, Tori Zierenberg did go down about 37th minute, it looks like, near the end of that first half. I think she was going down, she was going up for a header in the box. It was another short corner that then got chipped in from maybe 20 yards out. And I think she had gone up with the goalkeeper and there was a tussle. It was at the far end, so it was a little bit hard to see. But once she had gotten subbed out, you could tell who had left the field. And she had come off for Reagan Robb gets subbed on, I believe. And I can thank Ryan for that.
Unconfirmed.
Ryan doing a lot of sleuthing on Instagram. Would show some pictures and hand me his binoculars and be like, that's her. And I would confirm. at least confirm in that they look similar to my eye while watching.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Big shout out to Ryan Scharf, PPosaurus on Discord. He also attended but did not want to come on the show because he's silly. But he did give us some notes and is very, very good at Instagram sleuthing. It likes to suggest for his algorithm.
He's too busy hanging out with his friends.
Yeah, his family of friends. It's crazy to start the sentence with shout out and then end it with calling him silly. Is it a shout out?
I just called him silly. I didn't say anything mean.
That's kind of how we treat Ryan universally, though. So I hope he knows he's loved, you know.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So the second half, we made no immediate subs.
No. No subs from that start.
Yeah. So... how much, tell us about before we did make subs, anything of note then, because we still have the same players? Did you see anything new?
Maybe seeing the midfield partnership with Listro and Sam Kroger being a little bit more like time together. You could see the different combinations they would do. While they're both, you know, progressive and wanting to attack, it seems like Kroger's more of how we had Jade Moore kind of protect the back line and lets Jordy get up. And, you know, she wasn't specifically making shots on goal, but playing those threads up to the center attacking mid or knocking it on to Shippy or knocking it on to Sid. So it's fun to see Jordy get more into an attacking sense. And with Kroger there, she's very confident of like getting back quick and stopping any attacks. Before they get to half field, she had a couple of sliding tackles that were very fun to watch.
Nice. All right. So around the, 66th minute, we made subs?
Around the 60th minute, we brought on McNeil for Scarpelli. Then I think in the 75th minute is when we did like a more like line change kind of move.
Okay, and take me through some of those changes.
Okay, so we had Beardsley stayed the same, but our whole back line had changed, other than McNeil coming on about 10, 15 minutes earlier than that. So now we have Jordan Zaid as our right wing back. We kind of have like a 5 back, three back situation going on now. Before we, in the first half, we had flat four across the back. So starting now, we have Jordan Zaid as our right wing back. Taylor Chisholm got some time out here as our right center back. Jasmine Ferguson, I believe, was our like center back. I could not tell who the left side of center back was. I kept hearing the name Grace whenever players would refer to her. And then Sabrina McNeil out as our left wing back for our like five piece defensive line. After that, we have just Brooke Hendricks in the midfield as kind of like a shield destroyer quarterback position. She was doing a lot of talking, a lot of telling players where to move, when to move, who to make passes to, when to pick up a runner. It was interesting to watch, especially considering we had, you know, three other center backs out on the field. It was like, oh, what are we doing with, what's Henny going to do? And, you know, about 5-10 minutes into her play, you could see like, oh, she's quarterbacking. She's just going to like bring the ball confidently up through that defense into midfield and then play it on to whoever is going to be coming in, McNeil on the left or Jordan Zaid on the right. And then, so in our attacking sense, for Reagan Robb, we had Daria Raji come in.
Also unconfirmed.
I forget. I think this is a signing. White, what was the first name?
Kennedy White.
Kennedy White. And then we had a striker up top that I couldn't see. They had switched. By the time the 75th minute, there was like some odd switching with like what ends they were attacking. So for three of like the four halves that they played, they were attacking the far end. So at this point, they had a new striker that we had no idea who it was. I did hear the name Jada a bunch. Jada, make the run. Someone hit Jada. She's blowing up the wing, something like that. And whoever it was, they got two goals. So it's exciting. Hopefully we get a name. If they're a trialist, sign them up.
All right. So for wild speculation's sake, because it's fun, Grace, most people will think of Grace Philpotts, played for Brooklyn last year, I want to say, or Spokane. Or played for Brooklyn 1 year and then Spokane another year.
Jacksonville. Flipped.
Oh, shit. No, you're right. It is Jacksonville. I'm an idiot. It is Jacksonville. I'm so dumb. I don't know who I'm getting her mixed up with. Never mind. I am a professional. Yes, you're right. Jacksonville. And she was not re-signed. I think I remember going back yesterday and she had a thank you post, I think. Possibility. Other possibility. Reagan Rabe was just let go from the Orlando Pride. She had a thank you post about a month ago. Sounds like she had a short-term contract there. Maybe she's just looking to hang around Florida for a little while and saw the Sun were available. And then we also have Daria Raji, has not been announced. Came from I was about to say DC United. DC Power. came from DC Power, would be a great addition to Alexis Theoret and Deja Torbert. And then we think Jada Bedoya would also be from DC. So it looks like we're ransacking DC and Brooklyn this year.
Again,
none of this is confirmed.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I would say the wild speculation just goes based on the names I heard shouted out on the field.
Yeah, and it could be other folks at this point. We have no idea, but it's really fun to guess and also hope because that sounds like a baller lineup. I am so here for it.
I saw Deja Torbert and Alexis Theoret were both there, but they didn't make it on the field. They were just warming up, doing some laps around, and then at some point I saw them doing keepy up with Hannah Keen.
Were there any other former Sun players that you happened to see?
Former Sun players
might just be hanging around. Like
I saw Dory Haugen walking okay. around. I'm not sure if she had rejoined or not. But she was walking around in a leg sleeve, not like a cast or anything. But so I guess hopefully the surgery went well. There was no DSB on the sideline, so the coaching staff was very vocal and you know, seemed to seemed very well drilled. So I'm sure they'll report back. Other than that, there were two goalkeepers dressed that I was not familiar with. I don't think we've announced any other goalkeepers, but Emery Wegner was there, but she was in street clothes. it was the Lids Beardsley show for sure. And she did really good. She had a handful of very good saves. I want to say two specifically that got knocked onto the crossbar, and then one down low that was a good save. And she almost got to the UE goal, the first goal in the first half. She was maybe a hands width away from getting back across. She had made a stop at the near post, and then UE had popped in near the far.
Yeah, just from a roster standpoint, we definitely need to announce or like sign one more keeper. I think you have to have three, right? And then in the past, we've had at least one, if not two, academy keepers, or at least younger training ground style keepers. So you would expect one more of those, hopefully one of the two trialists that was there, or maybe they're already signed and haven't been announced yet. As for the rest of our roster, with the newest announcements, we're at 20 now. So that's the minimum, but of course we might add upwards of, I think the max is 5 academy players that we can sign on academy contracts. No, I think it's 6, but we signed 5 last year or something like that. And we like academy players. Last year we had a graduating class. So you would expect that again, but you would still think, and we've thrown some names around in the last few minutes, you would still think we have 3 or 4 maybe signings, and that's kind of the amount of people that either haven't been announced and we know who they are, or we don't know who they are. So yeah, overall, I mean, the Sun has floated around 30 players for the full roster, including academy training ground level, and being at 20, you would expect more of those announcements to come through. So yeah, somebody had mentioned in the Heatwave Discord maybe this game was an opportunity to finalize some of those, or they're already finalized, and just get them some minutes in a competitive environment, because they're probably not going to be playing a lot this year, or we won't need them to play if there's not a lot of injuries for some of the younger players too. So yeah, it's pretty promising if some of those names come through that we are speculating about.
Yeah.
I'll say the unnamed quote unquote trialist in the second half, sign her up, 2 goals, 2 very good goals. Not to mention Jordan Zaid grabbing one in that second half as well.
Were there any other key plays, any other pairings you noticed that you liked in the second half?
I noticed we had a tendency for Viv Bissett to kind of in the way she did the first season, be like send cannonballs up big diagonal balls up to on rushing players. And her and Sabrina McNeil, I think, have a really good partnership. Because Sabrina would just be released, run up the wing, and cross it in for some chaos in the box. One of those Shea Connors. You could tell she tried for a little bit to be like, should I do a bicycle kick here? But, you know, didn't want to bust it out in training and, you know, hurt somebody.
I like that it's hurt somebody else and not herself.
Oh, yeah. No. She'd score the goal, but then trash a college student.
Yeah. We want them to stick with soccer longer. Nice.
I said that about wraps up the scrimmage. Did you have any other thoughts? Anything else you wanted to say about what you saw?
I know I've said it a couple times, but this open scrimmage really made me excited to see the team get out there and play. And I wish opening week was here, despite the heat. But week and a half or so, we'll be there getting loud for the team at the watch party.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much, Mike. We really appreciate you taking the time not only to wake up super early and go and then sweat your butt off, and then also get rained on and take notes.
Well, the rain was nice. It was cooling from after sweating so much.
True. But thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Go Sun.
And thank you again to Mike for going to the scrimmage and telling us all about it. I don't know how to go into this ad, so we're just going to say go to shop.rblrsports.com. Use promo HEATWAVE, HEATWAVE. Wow, I can spell. Yep. To get 10% off everything. Woo!
Yes.
Phenomenal ad.
Good stuff over there.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that was excellent from Mike, and I want to again thank him. But we also have news, and you've already heard a little bit of it because they played in the scrimmage that Mike reviewed. But we had three roster announcements total, two additions. Well, one addition, one stay the same shin, and one subtraction that we already knew about. So we know that Parker Goins is coming back. Also, I just learned today her name is Kennedy. Her actual first name is Kennedy, and she goes by Parker.
What?
So we have two Kennedys instead of two Maddies now. But one of them already
Are
goes by
serious?
Parker, so there's no... Yes. So I just learned that today.
That's crazy.
Also, we have a new signing, Sam Kroger. You heard about her work with Lister in the midfield just a few minutes ago. And the team officially said thank you to Maddie Picorni, which is overdue, I will say. Don't know why it took so long. Her loan would have ended about a month ago, officially. Like, she just wouldn't have been. The team would have had no obligation to her. And maybe they were still talking about her being involved, and they decided not. We have no idea. And it's not worth speculating because we have no idea. So, but thank you to Maddie Picorni. We've already said it on the show, but now the team has officially said it. And that wraps up all of the 25-26 roster anything between Parker and Maddie. Now we know where that entire roster has ended up in terms of being on the Sun or not being on the Sun anymore. Also, while I was just looking into this quickly, we have no new roster picks on the website, no new headshots of the players on the roster page on the website. Last year's players are just still on there with last year's pictures. And that makes me feel like maybe the new photos are in a new jersey, possibly. Because why would they not just put the photos up if the players are wearing the same jersey? So that's my throw up the wild speculation graphic again. But it feels like maybe we have something new coming our way, which is kind of fun. And look out for that, possibly. So just to give you a refresher on Parker Goins, she is a forward. She wears number 22 for the Sun. She was off the roster for about a month. They removed her from the roster page, and then she's back. But I'm still going to give you a little bit of a review. She was the SEC Midfielder of the Year in 2021. She originally signed with Racing Louisville from 2022 to 2024 and had 36 appearances there. And she signed with the Sun in 2025 and had 17 appearances with 2 goals in this past season. So I think she was a little bit underutilized. She was part of that forward, rotating forwards that nobody really stood out or found their stride and owned really any forward position other than Nocello. So I think her coming back, but with some of what Mike was saying about the scrimmage, a little bit more discipline and things like that, she could look better this season. And if she's part of the plan, because she's returning, obviously the team and her agreed that she's part of the plan, she might have an opportunity to show her stuff a little bit better than on a pretty rough team last year. So that's Parker. We're glad she's back. Let's go. Her roster page little blurb was reactivated, which is just funny that they took her off, but it makes sense. They didn't want us. They were still in negotiations, presumably. But we have a new signing. Somebody totally new to us, unless you've watched Brooklyn games last year. We have Sam Kroger coming in to the midfield, although she wears a number 3. So number 3 is traditionally like a left back number, but sometimes players just like numbers.
I think a lot of players nowadays, it's just like, that's my favorite number.
So it's the same number she wore in Brooklyn, and she was playing in the midfield there too. So she is a midfielder. She has played on the left, but it was kind of like left wing back or left wing. But she is primarily a midfielder. And like Mike said, she was doing business with Listro in the midfield. And it sounds like she can do pretty good there. I have a couple notes that I really liked about her work But let me go through her history overall. So she played her college ball at Rutgers University in New Jersey. She's a New Jersey girl. I think actually originally she was born in China and then she was adopted and grew up in New Jersey. I mean, from less than 1 year old, she got to New Jersey and grew up there. So like I said, she's a Jersey girl. And so like Liz said about Leah Scarpelli, it's another Jersey New York player retiring down to Florida, moving down to Florida.
Yep. It's another snowbird.
At Rutgers, she had some second and third team accolades, no crazy player of the anything super notable, but she did have 78 appearances in four seasons with 15 goals and 15 assists. So she was out there, she was doing work across those 4 years. And I found this interesting quote that might help contextualize what Sam Kroeger does overall. And this was written during her sophomore year at Rutgers, but it's about her freshman year. In her first year, Samantha Kroeger's role with the Rutgers women's soccer team was very much of the blue collar variety, doing the dirty work so the team's star players could shine. So we see that a little bit in the scrimmage, in the midfield with Listro. We also know Listro doesn't get on the score sheet as often, but we would not be the Sun without her contributions in the midfield. Not that the score sheet is the only statistical reference we have of how good a player is, but it seems like she brings more to the table than the stats might suggest. She played for Morris Elite Soccer Club in the W League, which I found interesting because not a ton of our players have went through the W League because the league is so young and also so are they. So they either came straight from college or maybe they were in NWSL. But this is one player who from college went to the W League in 2023. That's an amateur summer women's league, if you're not familiar. So it is usually for college age players to play over the summer, but she played for Morris Elite. And then she signed to Brooklyn FC in 2024 as one of their founding players, along with Leah Scarpelli was another one of those. She had 56 appearances. She had three-time appearances as Team of the Month, in the Team of the Month. I couldn't have said that worse. last season, she was in the Team of the Month in 3 months. Thank you. And she had 7 assists last season, which is tied for the single-season record in the Super League. So she contributed as much as... you know, we were saying that she seems to be doing work that's intangible. She also tangibly assisted a lot of goals. So that is pretty cool. And I was discussing her with some users in the USL Discord, and a Brooklyn fan explained to me that her role in the midfield this past season was diminished because the coach's tactical approach was kind of moving the ball past the midfield very quickly. They're moving the ball from the back line up front very quickly, and so the midfielders kind of got left out of the plan a little bit. So we did notice when looking into her that her stats in the second year were a little bit worse than the first year. She had less contributions, less time on the ball, but she did play in every game last season. So she started, I think, 26 and played in all 28. So she's there, she's balling. So I'm very excited to see what she can do for us. If her role is still going to be that blue collar role, letting the stars shine around her, or if she's going to be commonly assisting. I mean, I think Sabrina McNeil is another player that snuck up on us as one who is contributing a lot in terms of assists. The fact that we have multiple players now that are underrated assisters is kind of fun. And it sounds like we have some good forwards to get on the end of those. So overall, very excited about Sam Kroeger being here as well. Looks like it's already starting pretty well based on the scrimmage, and we'll know kind of next weekend, you know, if she's going to be in the starting lineup in that midfield. I'm not really sure how many other options we have to start next to Listro, but that is basically where she will be. I mean, they might push her out to the left because she does have some experience there, but really central midfield, maybe one of them going forward, one of them staying a little bit back, will be how she lines up if she's starting for us come the first game of the season in Dallas. But yeah.
Okay, so I remembered this from when I was looking her up when we signed her too. Another note for that, like, she was being improperly utilized for her talents. When she was on that W League team, it was one season, 1 year, 11 appearances, she had 4 goals. So I am 100% sure that she. Whatever it was, they just weren't putting her in a goal scoring position Because I mean, only having like, what did she have, two or three goals? No, she had one goal.
She had one goal in the first season and zero in the second season.
Against Fort Lauderdale, by the way, guys. So she already knows what to do.
She's sun through and through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And then beyond that, we know that it's tough to stand out on a bad team like the Sun were last year. So Brooklyn has also been out of the playoffs just with us the whole season, basically. We were both pretty much out of the playoffs. At one point, they pushed a little bit towards the conversation, but they were never in it. So I think they just didn't have, and that goes to show why they turned over so much of their roster this year. I mean, we have three players from them currently, and we might sign more if we don't know, but it shows why they've turned over so much of their roster. Something just wasn't working and they want to build something new up there. And the players that were in that system doesn't necessarily mean they're bad players. Just got to figure out how to use them to their strengths. And hopefully if the Sun are targeting them and looking to transfer them in, it's because we know what their strengths are and how they can work for us in that regard. So I'm excited to see what she can do, what Parker can do again, and how this kind of fully rebuilt midfield and forwards work together coming up soon.
Sorry, I was looking at my settings for a second. Yes. The next thing that we were going to talk about today is we had some more information come out about the Spokane Zephyr and the quality of care. And I can't think of a sentence right now for some reason. The players were not treated the way they should have been for a Division One football team, or, you know, with Division One women's football team. It was ridiculous. So you can find this article if you Google like Spokane Zephyr, it should come up. However, I put down where to pull from? Of course not. That would be too smart. But in a nutshell, Spokane was shit to their team. And it's mismanagement on many levels, starting with the fact that when players had hours logged, it was not accurate in any way, shape, or form. It was dramatically underrepresented. There were times where there's one player who worked two away matches, including four flights, and team meals, practices, rehab, all of that, and they logged like 16 hours for her over 2 weeks. And this really, I'll use our one for this. This really fucked the players over, because they couldn't even file for just general unemployment in Washington State. It's a little ridiculous, especially since the team did not field any questions. They basically like handed them a flyer and told them to apply for unemployment when they gave them the news. It's a little bit ridiculous. So no Zephyr player topped 321 hours for the whole season. So you're thinking at least 10 months. You know that these girls worked more than like 3.5 hours a year or a month. It's a little bit crazy. Washington State's minimum threshold for unemployment is almost double that. Hope Heisey, God bless her, did go on the record. And I do completely understand why there were a couple other players who chose not to go on the record for fear of retaliation. That's completely valid. I will say Hope Heisey does have a couple accolades to her name. She can, you know, take this stance and be public about it in a way that most likely won't blow back on her with the league, because she has some standing. So she went on record saying there's days where we were clearly on the field more than what's being reported. And that doesn't even account for all the other things that we did. Multiple players have not found new contracts since the news was dumped on them. Several have had to take multiple remote work jobs just to make ends meet. Spokane recorded fewer than 280 hours for one anonymous player over the course of the year. Like I said, if we're doing like a 10-month schedule, that's like 28 hours a month. I'm bad at math. It wasn't three like earlier. It was 28. Just move a decimal, my bad. This player detailed a daily schedule that included mandatory report time an hour before the first team activity, the first team activity, team meetings, training, mandatory weightlifting. She averaged at least 6 hours mandatory working hours on a training day, not including recovery, showering, and equipment care. Another player estimated that the players worked like a minimum of 4 to 5 hours on home match days and significantly more on travel days. Obviously, there's a lot more going in when you're traveling, and it usually averaged about 6 days a week of work. And when a player reached out to Spokane's vice president of operations, she was told to follow the proper channels and go through the Players Association. As a note, employers will generally push back on unemployment claims because payouts can raise their unemployment tax rate, which might be why they started undercutting these hours this year. I don't know. We don't know what happened last year. I don't know if they were doing hours this way this whole time. If they could be doing this on the men's side too and screwing them over, now that I think about it. It's poor management all around, and it's going to end poorly. It ended poorly for the Zephyr, and it sounds like it's going to end poorly for the Velocity at some point too.
The only thing I'll say about the men's side is that they already have a CBA signed for that league, so there might be a protection from the Players Association that the women didn't have. And the other thing with just this, like, the way that these are being reported and the way they're running the business is just, like, get any owner that does this out of the Super League, please. Just if any owner thinks that this is the way that, not even to run a successful team, but if you start a team, any team, but specifically women's soccer that is growing and fighting battles to grow and finding their audience, I really hope the league, while it sounds like they've been less than helpful, and I kind of cut in as you were getting to how the league is not helping, I hope the league at least is looking at how this just completely sucks for the players and how the new ownerships they look at. For one, hopefully all 8 teams that are currently still in the league are agreeing to the CBA. That CBA has protections, and moving forward, the teams will be taking it more seriously, or maybe almost all the teams already are, which would be great. But like, any new ownership in the league has to be miles, miles better than this. This is not the low bar. The low bar has to be floors above this bar. This is low beyond belief, just how shitty this is, a way to treat any employee, let alone somebody who's putting their body on the line for your company, and in a league that is providing jobs for players that probably wouldn't be able to play professional otherwise, after college. And some really quality players too. I mean, like we said, every team in the league has gotten a Zephyr. They had a great roster put together, so I was fuming. I had to get that out, but I'll let you finish.
I understand.
But it's crazy. And we saw from Dallas that the new Dallas ownership feels like the league is looking at better owners, and like, they damn well better be, because this can never happen again the way that Spokane happened.
Yeah. And it's frustrating too, because you're talking about the league needing to do better. And we had Madeline Desiano is quoted saying that nobody from the league's office reached out to any of the players. And she tried to contact league president Amanda Vandenbort and did not hear back, which is incredibly disappointing. Like, even a canned response would at least be something. Just to not answer at all is kind of ridiculous when you're the president of the league. They lacked resources just kind of all around, it sounds like. That when they lacked physio and support, players wanted to go elsewhere, and the club would only pay for it like twice a week, because that was the minimum covered under Washington's labor laws. Because of this, the Zephyr racked up 5 ACL injuries. They had 1 full-time trainer, and they were splitting another one with the men's team, the Velocity. While the Velocity were technically founded about a year before the Zephyr, I looked it up, and one was 2021, the other one was 2023. The idea that they've been sharing a physio person is a little bit ridiculous, because they're a Division III team. They should have fewer resources than the Division I team. I'm not saying that they deserve less. I'm saying that there should be a higher standard for the Division I. I have nothing against the Velocity, by the way. They did not do the Velocity, the players, they're fine. I have nothing against them. They're just doing their jobs and they're going about their lives.
I mean,
I'm strictly mad at the staff and the management that allowed this to happen.
It's concerning in the Super League because every other team other than Tampa Bay Sun has an ownership that shares a men's team under the same ownership. So if it's that bad in Spokane, but they have a Division III team, what resources are DC Power getting when DC United is their men's team? I think it's a little bit different of a circumstance. So I'm not saying DC Power is guilty of any of these things, but it's definitely concerning if, like I said, the standards across the league are not consistent and agreed upon and met, that every single other team has every single other business operation team has a men's team and a women's team and are going to try and combine some resources to save money between them. And in women's soccer, in women's sports overall, it's the women's team that gets the short end of the stick almost every time. If it happens in the Premier League in England, it'll happen in the United States in the Super League. So yeah, that is concerning. And also part of a reason why I am appreciative that the Sun is an independent organization, as much as I like the Rowdies. And I think the Rowdies are one of those teams that do soccer right in the United States. I think we're a model for a lot of other teams. Everything I've heard from that organization is that the players are treated well and they've always met any standards before the CBA was signed and things like that. I think the Sun would do fine under Rowdy's ownership. I'm almost glad that the Sun aren't, because then it never has to be a conversation. We know that, you know, and I'm not saying the Sun are perfect organizationally either, but I'm saying that we know that there's no other business interest. Our ownership is fully committed to making the Sun the best possible team it can be. And that never raises a question about shared resources or anything like that. So in a way, it's kind of nice. In another way, ticket packages, cross promotion, shared resources can be good. The Rowdies have a nice facility, things like that. You know, maybe we're missing out on a couple things compared to teams that share ownership, but every other team in the league shares ownership. And part of the reason why this was handled so badly is because of that. So that concerns me too. And that's an unanswered question, you know, even now.
It's ridiculous. So to recap the what I was saying before, so the Zephyr racked up 5 ACL injuries in 2 seasons. Hope Heisey's directly relating this to the mismanagement of player load, not having the right equipment. After about 2 months of pushback, the players were able to increase twice a week or 3 times a week to go outside elsewhere to get physio, to get rehab. The team was just reluctant to pay for a lot of things outside of the team. And because of it, players suffered. Velocity also apparently got priority when it came to scheduling, shared field, medical resources, even though they are Division III. They also got the same amount of meals as the men's team, which is not really their complaint. It's more that most D1 women's teams are fed every day with a training session or match. So there were some days, like game days, where they would have to provide all their own meals. Which it feels like such a, not small in how much it costs, but small in like in what it can provide for your players.
Yep.
Just knowing they have, you know, a good nutritious meal that they don't have to worry about putting together themselves on game day. They can just focus on games. It's little things that add up, and it really sounds like Spokane was trying to make money on their bottom line, and once they realized they weren't going to do that, they were like, "No, we're pulling it."
Yeah.
The last part of the article talks about how players who had expiring contracts this season were just wondering if they were ever going to be re-signed. Heisey is quoted saying, up until that locker room meeting, she knew teammates who were, quote, still holding out for new contracts. And I can't imagine, like, you're putting your faith in this team that you've played for, you know, 1 or 1 year, 2 years at this point. And they just completely pull the rug out from underneath you. So I have to say, big thanks to the players who spoke in this, the ones who named, the ones who weren't named. Thank you for shedding light on this. These are things that we need to know. It reminded me a little, not quite as bad as Sky Blue FC back in like 2018, but it is, history doesn't repeat, it does rhyme. So yeah. It's feeling a little bit like that.
Yeah. And hopefully, I always throw optimism in at the end of an episode. Hopefully, like we talked about in the last episode, the NWSL CBA, groundbreaking, the league standard have improved so much. The new teams coming into that league have had incredible facilities and incredible like organizations, and
Denver has smoke cannons. Sorry, I just remembered that from last. I was watching the game like either last night or the night before, and I saw that they had like full size smoke cannons. Like, oh, I want some NWSL money. Damn.
Yeah. No, I mean you're totally right, but that's I hope that in the same way that the Super League proposed CBA, we still have not heard if it's been voted upon. But again, why would you announce so many details if it wasn't on the way to that? I really hope it is. But the proposed CBA, following in the footsteps of what NWSL has established in the 2020s, this is this decade history. The NWSL CBA is this decade. The USL Super League hopefully is this decade. The league founding and the CBA being signed. And these... the ownerships of these teams are seeing news like this, and again, like you said, thank you to players for speaking out, so then articles get written and pressure gets applied where it needs to, and the organizations moving forward that are agreeing to the CBA can see what I mean. You can't do this to people. Like, this is on a human level awful, but also in terms of news, in terms of coverage, in terms of it makes you look really bad. People are taking questioning looks at Velocity now. Again, not because of the responsibility of any players or staff on that team, but the way the ownership treated the Zephyr. Now we know, there's no way, even if the men are getting priorities, they're probably still doing the cheapest possible version of whatever the League One CBA allows, So very concerning. I really hope the Super League only gets better from here. I hope we never get another story quite like this, where it's just so egregiously offensive to the players. And I really hope there's definitely players who are falling through the cracks there. So many players have gotten signed. Hope obviously has a huge, she's been so successful and has a huge career ahead of her as well. But there's players that were bench players there or practice field players that will probably never see a professional pitch again. And now they got to figure the rest of their lives out way sooner than they thought, because of something out of their control. Like you were said, they might've been holding out, hope for the contract to renew or the team to renew, and they didn't. So yes. So not as hopeful as I thought, but.
Oh, the article, by the way, was on rangemedia.co. It looks to be a Washington specific website. This was an article by Yang Yu Huang. So if you're looking for it, go to rangemedia.co. I'm sure if you type in Spokane Zephyr, it'll come right up.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make sure if anybody wanted to actually go read it. By all means, please. It is incredibly well written. It was really just well done. Just someone asking the right questions. And I'm, again, so thankful to the players who talked. I can't transition well this episode. This is the episode of not transitions. make sure you're watching us at RBLR Sports on YouTube, at RBLR Sun FC on all the socials that are listed up there. I am Lizzie the Lion on Blue Sky. He's mom says I'm Ultra on Twitter. And this is RBLR Sun. And thanks, we Brian. Are 10 days from kickoff. 10 days.
That means we're only a few more than 10 days away from seeing the team in person, away to Jacksonville. Join the Heatwave Discord and come with us.
Yeah, do that.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.